The Christmas Story and Other Redeeming Myths. A myth is a tale that tells truth. At the risk of being a Grinch who ruins Christmas, I'd like to go behind the Christmas story and relate what scholars know about the biblical texts involved. I hope that the result will be a more enlightened perspective on the role of such stories in the common life of humankind. In the second chapter of Matthew, we read the story of wise men who came from the east to worship the baby Jesus. These men were called Magoi, Greek for magicians, and scholars have identified them, if they were there, as Zoroastrian priests from Babylon. There are many problems with this story. If they were following a star in the east, they might have found a Hindu savior, but not a Jewish one. But most likely they would have been searching for their own savior, one named Seosiant. The Jewish historian Josephus hated King Herod and chronicled his life in great detail. But it is very odd that he never mentions the slaughter of infants found in Matthew 2:16. Could this be an element of what I call the savior archetype? Common patterns of events that are attributed to many of the world's saviors. In their various scriptures, the saviors are said to have had royal genealogies and miraculous conceptions. They worked miracles and escaped the clutches of death. Jesus, Krishna, and Zoroaster are also threatened in infancy by demon kings. Returning now to the beginning of the story, there's no record of of Caesar Augustus' decree that all the world should be enrolled. The Romans kept extremely detailed records of such events. Not only is Luke's census not in these records, it goes against all that we know of Roman economic history. In Josephus' account of the Roman census of AD 6, he writes that those people taxed were assessed other possessions, including lands and livestock. But Luke has Joseph and Mary making a three-day journey away from their home and possessions in Nazareth to register in their alleged ancestral home in Bethlehem. At this point, some readers may be saying, "Way to go, Geyer. You've just spoiled Christmas more than any commercial enterprise could ever do." But let me tell you about a wise woman in an African village whose job it was to instruct the children in the tribe's myths. She began each session with the following disclaimer: "The stories that I will tell you are not true, but they are the most important stories that you will ever hear." In India, it's the grandmother's task to teach Hindu mythology to the children. These are fantastic tales of great heroes and heroines, but also much violence, death, and sex. Their graphic, in-your-face style, not too different from Grimm's fairy tales or many Old Testament stories, has a very important sociological purpose. In Europe and America, where we pride ourselves, even very religious people do, by living without myth and legend, we paid huge sums to psychotherapists to help us recover from unresolved experiences of violence, death, and sex. I've always thought that Hindu mythology serves a fairly effective substitute for a mental health program that the Indians cannot afford. On December 18th, I was uplifted and made whole by the best performance of Handel's Messiah that I've heard in 20 years. That same day, I was moved beyond measure as Unitarian children, some of whom I've taught world religions, celebrated the miraculous births of Confucius, Buddha, and Jesus. Could not these births simply be symbols of the light of hope that every newborn child brings to a broken world? This is Nick Geyer, the Palouse Pundit, wishing you a good day.